All right, today we're having a special conversation. Phil Simon, you'll know him from books such as The New Small. We had him on about that book, and he's got a new book that he's going to publish called The Age of the Platform. There's a Kickstarter campaign. We'll be putting links to that in the show notes as well, so we encourage you to visit the website, BulaNetwork.com. Welcome, Phil. Good to talk to you.
Randy, how you doing, bud?
I'm good. All right, in the book, and I know this much about it, profiling, you know, what you call the gang of four, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and the book is primarily about how these companies have just had explosive, extraordinary growth by having platforms that are just terrific, and they have been able to avoid, for a lot of reasons that I'm sure the book is going to go into, what other companies have experienced in the past, explosive growth and then just go into a tailspin and crash and burn. So, I mean, tell me how you got onto this idea. I mean, what was the genesis of all this?
Sure. Randy, great to be here. There were a couple of reasons for writing this book. First, as someone who's worked for himself for the better part of a decade, I often think about if I absolutely had to go to work for a large organization, which ones would it be? And as someone who pays attention to technology, the answer is pretty clear. Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, they're absolutely killing it. Apple just had its best quarter ever. Stock went over $400. Google's obviously on a tear with Google Plus. So these are four companies that are doing some very interesting things. But beyond individual moves, Randy, they really embrace this notion of a platform. And by that, I mean sort of a vibrant ecosystem of partners and customers, users, real communities. And I thought about those four companies, and I thought about, just on a personal level, what I've done over the last 3 years. Now, 3 years ago, I did one very specific type of consulting. I made all my money from it, and I had a great year. I realized, though, that that was actually very dangerous to be that specific. So over the course of the last 3 years, I've really diversified. I've written 3 books. This will be my fourth. Started public speaking, doing paid webinars, social media, different types of consulting. So I've really built my own platform. And if I can do it, then any other company can as well. I don't think that there's a dramatic difference in terms of philosophy between myself and Apple. Yes, they have billions of dollars more than what I have. But conceptually, we're not afraid to experiment. We're not afraid to fail. We're not afraid to enter new lines of business. Looking at Amazon in 1994, when Jeff Bezos started the company, it was an online bookstore. It wasn't a seller of cloud computing. It wasn't a publisher. It wasn't a maker of hardware. So that's just one of the many examples in the book of how these companies have embraced the platform as a business model. So against that backdrop, I decided to write the book.
I catch myself repeatedly telling some of my clients to push through to success in some targeted area as opposed to being distracted. I find that so many small businesses, solopreneurs in particular, they venture in a certain direction and then, much like a dog chasing a squirrel, they get distracted and, well, they think, okay, this over here, that's a good idea, when they really haven't finished the first one. I'm curious your comments, because each of these companies really made their claim to fame. It seems to me that they really got the foundation of their platform best built in a very specific targeted way, and once they reached that goal, then they began to get quite diverse.
It's an interesting tension, Randy, and I don't think that everyone who reads the book will necessarily agree with the central premise. There are certainly those that believe, as you know, that companies of all sizes ought to follow the traditional GE model under Jack Welch, which is that you ought to be very good at one thing, right? Under Welch, GE was either first or second in the market or they got out. I just think that that's kind of an antiquated notion right now. Particularly, you know, what are the odds that you're going to be the best in web design or the best in social media or the best in being a restaurateur or a barbershop? Are there particular things that you can do that complement your existing offerings? I'm not saying if you run a search engine, for example, you ought to get involved in producing ballet. But for me, you know, once I started writing, it wasn't that much of a stretch to start a publishing company or to get involved in webinars. So I kind of moved, if you like, horizontally. The same thing with Amazon, for example. Once it had success selling books, it realized that it actually could be a publisher. and it could make hardware that would let people read books. So there is that sort of inherent tension between being good at one thing and trying to do everything. I don't think that any company can do everything. In fact, if you look at Google yesterday, they announced that they were canceling Google Labs, the source of a number of interesting innovations. Google's actually becoming more mature. They still want to maintain that level of experimentation and innovation. At the same time, though, they don't want to be all over the place. So that's one of the tensions, Randy, that I address in the book.
But you used a key word there. You know, once they were accomplished, once you got this initial, you know, this initial platform, this initial one targeted kind of an area, then branching out was vastly easier. I'm talking about people that are, they're still in the construction, let's say, phase of their platform. And it seems to me, I'm just curious your thoughts, that so if Amazon became known as being the seller of books, I mean, that was kind of their first, once they accomplished that, define accomplished however you choose to, then all of a sudden now there's a host of other variety of enterprises that they've embarked on. But there's so many small business owners and so many solopreneurs that they're not going in that targeted area to have once accomplished it in some particular vein. It's what I'm referring to. I mean, am I completely crazy?
No, and I think that this all gets back to this notion of external driven innovation, ecosystems, communities. So, for example, I read a statistic the other day that with Twitter, one of the companies that I profile in the book, and certainly an emerging platform, I wouldn't put it on the level yet of Google or Facebook, but there are something like a million different apps developed for Twitter, right? Twitter has an open API. People can build apps that do a whole bunch of different things. So Twitter as a company may have some sort of overarching strategy, hopefully not the least of which is to actually make some money. But there are all these partners out there. So, for example, about 3 months ago, a company called, I think it was TweetDeck, built an app that Twitter said, hey, this is pretty useful. So they bought it for $40 or $50 million. The point here is that you can only do so much internally. And again, I think the days of companies rebuking things that were not invented here are coming to an end. You realize, and books have discussed this, like Wickonomics or macroeconomics, you know, there are millions of partners out there prospectively that can take your product or service and do some incredible things with it, innovate, go in a whole bunch of different directions. The point is, and this is the premise of the book, you need to embrace those partners. You don't want to be Microsoft from the late 1990s, will either buy you or will crush you. You know, I'm an Apple partner. I have an app in the App Store. But I'm just one of them. I sell books on Amazon. I can make money through Google AdSense and AdWords. So these big companies, I agree with you, realize that they can't do everything. So in a way, they're kind of outsourcing some of their innovation.
You know, old school was very, you know, it was very much, and I'm of the generation, you know, that looked with admiration at what Welch did at GE, and it was very much, in fact, hearing him speak here in Dallas, I was invited to some small gathering years ago when he was still chairman, and he was asked by Herb Kelleher in this little meeting, you know, to describe, what's your strategic plan? And he said, we don't have strategic planning at GE. He said, the strategic plan is we look at the competition and ask ourselves, what can they do in the next 18 months to nail us to the wall? And then internally, we ask ourselves, what can we do in the next 18 months to nail them to the wall? And I look at this gang of four, and I realize that to some degree, there is an enormous competitive spirit. I mean, these are not people that are terribly friendly to people that they view as, you know, competitors in their space necessarily, and yet there's this enormously high level of collaboration as well. I mean, sometimes arch rivals join forces, you know, in whether it's buying patents and other things. I mean, make sense of that.
Right. Well, what was it? Khrushchev who said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly.
Right. So it is an interesting tension, again, and it's something, Randy, that I discuss in the book. There's a term that's come into vogue recently called frenemies. So sometimes your friends, sometimes your enemies. Now, you know, Google and Apple obviously have some conflicting interests, right? By the same token, Facebook turns off its API. They don't let you Google Facebook. That's a walled garden, and that's by design. That's why Facebook has a lot of its value. To your point about stealing each other's innovations, I mean, look what Google has done with Google Plus. It's very much like Facebook or like Twitter. So these companies constantly look at what they're doing and see how they can gain some sort of an advantage. And this gets to one of the notions in the book that I discuss. There's an engineering term called dynamic stability. And it's an interesting concept. Something can be at the same time in motion and stable. And I think that these platforms really are. Amazon, to your point, is not getting out of the book selling business, nor is Google getting out of the search business. But with regard to Google, Larry and Sergey are smart enough to realize that if they just focus on search, that can be really dangerous. Even though they make something like 97% of their revenue from search as a company, they're constantly trying to figure out the next thing. That's why they've morphed with us, Google Plus, or they've done some other things. So it's not like you can only focus on one thing, and you obviously have to be aware of your competition. I think that the speed of changes coming from competition has never been faster, and that was another reason that I decided to write the book.
Well, let me try to dig to some practical application for, say, solopreneurs in small business. So a solopreneur is hanging a shingle out in whatever space, and they do have to build a platform. I mean, where does that even begin for them? And I go back to the once having accomplished it, and that's really what I meant. Say for Amazon, when it came to book selling, do you think that the solopreneur? I tend to think, and I could easily be persuaded otherwise, I guess, but I tend to think that a solopreneur, a small business, in order to really have their own effective platform, don't they have to be known initially? Not forever, for all time, but don't they have to initially make their mark in an area, in some targeted specific endeavor?
I really hesitate, Randy, to use absolutes. I think that it certainly can help, but there's an expression in the National Football League: if you've got two starting quarterbacks, you have none. Or politically, if you stand for everything, then you stand for nothing.
Right.
So I understand that, again, by my own background, I had been known for one very specific type of consulting up until 2008. Now, that was fine for an initial brand, but the kind of work that I wanted to do in order for me to take my business to the next level required intentionally divorcing myself from that. So it certainly helps. And to me, it's more of an evolution, not a revolution. You know, Amazon did not immediately go from selling books to selling cloud services. If you look back over the company's history, again, it was an evolution over time. Apple in 2007 dropped the word computer from its company title because it really wasn't just a computer company anymore. You know, iTunes, I think, was initially launched in 2004, and Apple became a very profitable seller of different music, and now it's getting into cloud services, streaming TV, streaming movies. So these things happen over time. It's really tough for me, though, to say you absolutely have to follow these five steps.
No, and I understand that, and I'm not asking that. But well, let's just address marketing. And let's talk about at the outset, because the people that are probably going to be most attracted to even listening to this are going to be solopreneurs, you know, small business owners, and in some cases, people that are just, you know, maybe they're trying to start some side project that they hope will morph into some full-time project. So people are in various stages, let's say, of building their own platform. And obviously these are, but I know that in the book you're going to use some small business examples. You know, I don't want anybody to come away listening to this thinking, well, this is just about these big companies. That doesn't affect me. And it very much affects them. I mean, the lessons you point out, the lessons that we can learn from these companies, you know, much like some of these superstar pro athletes, we can look at how Roger Federer and some other pro athletes, how they perform, and the amateurs among us, we can learn a few things. My question would be, where do you see marketing? Where does marketing fit in? Because so many small business owners, really struggle with marketing and trying to target who they're really going to try to serve. And I guess that's really that's really what I'm trying to angle at here. With these companies, it seems to me that they were able to market in an area, succeed in marketing in that area, and it afforded them the opportunity to really make a vastly bigger platform. I think your career is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I could talk about myself, but I'm going to give you a different example in the book. The marketing, to answer your question, in this platform age is much less overt. So, for example, one of the case studies in the book is from the keyboardist of the band Dream Theater, one of my favorite bands, and I actually have a personal quote from the guy, Jordan Rudess. So when he gets up on stage, Randy, and he plays the apps that his company created on his iPad, he's demoing the product for 10,000 people every night. And these people are musicians, and many of them have iPhones and iPads, so they can literally buy that product right there, right then, if they're connected to the internet, or they can go home, or they can tell people about it. And it's an interesting example, even if you're not into Dream Theater or you've never even heard of them, because he is, in effect, doing marketing for Apple. The same way when people see what you're doing on a subway and you're playing Angry Birds, you go, oh, what's that game from Rovio? So by building these communities, Randy, people love Apple and Amazon, and not all the across the board. Some people don't like them, but Google, and I mean, Google's a verb right now. So the way that marketing happens is much more organic. It's not a matter, I mean, Google up until recently, as you know, didn't advertise. You know, I kind of laugh at Microsoft spending millions of dollars on commercials telling people to Bing it. Well, the reason that Google caught on as a verb is that it came from the bottom up. People said, oh, just Google it. And it was kind of cool, kind of hip. For the most part, I would argue people don't like being told what's hip. So it's happening on a much more organic level than sort of traditional marketing.
For a solopreneur or small business owner who says, well, that's all great and wonderful, Phil, but I, you know, I'm not able to play in front of 10,000. I mean, I'm trying to get 10 people in a room who would listen to my band play.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, that can be a challenge, but let's say you're looking for strategic partnerships. Let's say that you're up there. Again, I don't know about a particular band, but you're doing some things on social media. You're building out the planks in your platform. You have a good website. You make your music available on different music sites, whether it's, you know, Spotify or Pandora or iTunes. So you're taking advantage of the existing platforms. Look, this is not a 10-step guide for success, but it's an important model to understand because there's so many different businesses. You know, my own personal platform with the books, with the speaking engagements, with my website, that would be different than a musician's platform or let's say you run a restaurant or some other kind of business. I just think that you need to be aware of this notion of platforms because we are entering an economy right now in which we see these strategic alliances or partnerships and we see changes in technology faster than ever. I just don't think that you can be insular. You can't say, well, we're going to do what we do in a vacuum, and in 5 years, we're going to be this great company. I agree with what you're saying before about Jack Welch and planning. One of my quotes in the book is, I forget from the guy, but everyone likes planning because nobody has to do anything. You know, can anyone obviously say with any certainty, Randy, that in 5 years, you're going to know exactly what your business does?
No, I mean, shoot, in this economy, nobody knows in 5 months.
Right. So my point is that if you're embracing partnerships and this notion of ecosystem, if a change happens, you're going to be in a better position to adapt, just like Amazon and Facebook and Google and some of the other companies. I profile several small companies in the book, one of which is HubSpot, and they've created their own ecosystem as well with apps and partnerships and a store, and people create different tools that other people can use. HubSpot's a much, much smaller company in terms of employees and revenue than any of the Gang of Four. So there are other examples. In fact, a friend of mine started a company that I profile in the book for private online video platforms, and he did this in his spare time. So I'm a big fan, as you know from reading The New Small, of examples. I do not want to be preachy. So the book has a number of different small business example case studies in the book.
As you go around and speak, Phil, to you, because I find it problematic, and even in my work, you mentioned, you know, this isn't a 10-step guide, and I've got great respect for that. It's why I'm really attracted to your writing and just the way you approach things, because we are living in a world that very much loves that and always has, because everybody wants that proverbial easy button. Everybody wants that silver bullet, you know, just tell me what I got to do.
Right.
And it's not formulaic. In your speaking, I'm curious, and maybe this is too personal. If it is, I apologize. But as you speak and if you do any workshops and those kinds of things, how problematic is that? I mean, how problematic are you finding that as opposed to just trying to... Because to me, what your books do, and I mean this in as the greatest compliment, I mean, they provoke thought.
Right.
Which I think is ridiculously valuable. And maybe I'm going about it all wrong. But I find so many people that's not necessarily, you know, just from a buying perspective, that's not necessarily what they want. They want the formula, and to try to convince people, listen, there is no formula. There are all these variables that are completely different for you than for, you know, Joe Palooka across town who's in your space. I'm just curious from your vantage point. I mean, how does that affect you and the work that you do?
Yeah, there are plenty of people who don't agree with what I have to say. You know, in the new small, my central contention is that it was much easier for a small company to scale up than it was for a big company to scale down. And all else equal, you're better off working for a small company. That not everyone agreed with that. And I'm okay with that because I enjoy books and movies and music that challenge me. You know, my favorite TV show is Breaking Bad. That's a very complex show.
It's awesome.
Don't get me started about that.
Me either.
I think that the best books are the ones that challenge you. You know, if you look at a book like The Long Tail, which is one of my 10 favorite books, it's not a how-to guide. It helps you understand what is happening. And from that, you may be able to apply it to your business. Hopefully you can. If not, you may be extinct. But it's an important book. And one of the reasons that I actually turned down a traditional publisher again, like I did with the last book, is that I want complete creative control. Yes, I want to be edited. Yes, I want the book to be as clear as possible, but I want the central message of the book, which is that we've really entered a new age, one that embraces platforms and ecosystems, not to be changed. I don't want this to be another Me Too social media book. Is there a chapter in the book that explains how you can build your own platform? Of course. Are there tips throughout the book about using different planks and the specific lessons we can learn from the Gang of Four? No doubt. But I don't want this book diluted. I'd rather people had a very binary reaction to the book. I'd rather they said, this is brilliant or this sucks, rather than just, eh. Because to me, again, my favorite, as I said, movies and shows and bands are the ones that challenge you. And if you're just looking for the 10 steps that you need, you know what? There are books out there, and I think they're fine. I don't want to be too critical. But for me, if I'm going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and spend the next 12 hours writing, it has to be something that I think has the potential to be great. And I think that, particularly with my last two books, they have that potential. Now, would they sell more copies if they were, in some ways, made more anodyne? You know, maybe, maybe not. But ultimately, at the risk of being completely selfish, I want people to read the book. I want them to like it. I obviously solicit input like I am on the Kickstarter campaign when it comes to cover design, and I'll be doing the same thing with the interiors. But I want it to be my book, my vision, not a composite of 50 other business books. It's not different for the sake of being different, but I'm unaware of a book that takes this approach. And to me, that's how you create something truly great, whether it's art, music, movies, television, anything like that.
Well, and I think you said a mouthful when you said, you know, I mean, the 10-step guide, highly probable that many of those people seeking such a guide, you use the word extinct, and I agree with that, but the world is full of those people, which is why, as you point out in some of the things that you shared with me, these companies, these four big companies that you profile, they are extraordinary. If everybody did it, they would not be. And most everybody is looking for the easy button. I want to end on this note, and that is because I know we need to wrap this up. But talk to me about the ability of particularly these big four, as you get that large, to continue to embrace this whole notion of risk, of taking risks.
It's a fabulous question, and it's very intriguing to me. They're constantly having to deal with the tension of acting like a small company as they become big companies. And they haven't always succeeded. Just as an example, Google had to do some reshuffling. As I mentioned before, they killed Google Labs, but they're trying to act more like a small company. But Google's finding that Google killed Google Health about 2 weeks ago, not because it wasn't valuable, because people didn't use it, but it needs to have some sort of focus. So to me, the challenge once you get to that size is how do you continue to innovate but also maintain some focus? You don't want to be all over the place, but you to some extent you want to hedge your bet. And I think that's one of the reasons that these companies have opened up their APIs. And more than just the technology around APIs, that's application programming interfaces for the non-technical users, it's about a mentality. It's about looking at another company and saying, how can we work with them? If an acquisition makes sense, like Apple's apparently going to do with Hulu today, then fine, make the acquisition. But for the most part, you're not innovating by acquiring. In the book, I talk about eBay's, I think it was 2003, Skype acquisition, which was an unmitigated disaster. After 4 years, they wound up selling it off for basically what they paid. So it's very tough to acquire your way into innovation. You really do need to have some pretty dynamic folks heading the company. Again, there's no real secret to it. If you look at what News Corp bought out MySpace back in, I want to say, 2004. No one is confusing, scandal aside, Rupert Murdoch with Mark Zuckerberg. So you do need to have that leadership at the top, but you also need to have employees who are just very passionate and committed. So companies like Google obviously encourage their employees to play around with different things. So it is this inherent tension. It's something that I discuss in the book, because having someone going into a job every day doing the same thing day after day after day doesn't lend itself, as you know, to innovation. So how can you capture that ethos in a small company and a company that continues to grow? To me, that's why I said this is more of a management book, Randy, than a technology one. This is a book about a new business model. It's not a book about, how I program or how I use social media per se.
All right, Phil, tell folks, update us on the Kickstarter campaign and tell folks how they can reach you, find out more.
Yeah, the main website, Randy, is philsimonsystems.com, and on that site you will see on the right hand side a link to the Kickstarter project. It's about 50% funded with about 30 days left to go. In another couple weeks I'll have the ageoftheplatform.com up, but right now it's just a 404 error.
And we will put links in the show notes as well for those of you that are listening. And if you want to go, you can find those links at BulaNetwork.com. He is Phil Simon, author of The New Small and the upcoming. What's the release date on this? Any idea yet?
Yeah, mid-September, give or take. One of the benefits of running this through my publishing company is that I can get it out 6 months earlier than what the traditional publishers told me. So with the help of everyone's support on Kickstarter, it'll become a reality, and I'm really encouraging people, even if they don't know who I am. Just publishing right now, not to get off the subject, is in a state of flux. So the buffers, if you like, or the bottlenecks between authors and readers are sort of being disintermediated. So I think that even if you just agree with this new direction of creative types reaching their audiences directly, I'd certainly appreciate even a $2 or $5 contribution. Every little bit helps.
And the publishing company is Motion?
Motion Pub, that's my publishing company. I actually ran The New Small through it, and one of my clients is taking me up on my offer to turn their blog into a book. So again, that's now a publishing company, and making money through publishing books is now part of my own platform. So I am drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, good. And we'll have to do a show about that at a future date. The Age of the Platform, due out sometime in September. He is Phil Simon, and he's been on BulaNetwork.com. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks a lot, Randy.